So did you announce already what's happening in the future?
Not yet.
In the future?
She means vacation.
Winter vacation.
Oh, next week? So my hope for today is to kind of finish the first major piece of this. We've been spending a few weeks on the story of Nabal and David, and there's a few other pieces that I was going to get to, but I'm not going to because we've run out of time, but we'll find some other context in which to throw them in. But I sort of want to bring the first half of this, which is the David Nabal piece of it, to a close. And after our break, in the next 2 weeks we're off, after we get back from the break, we're going to move towards the end of this parak, the story of Abigail, which is not as long a piece. Right? It'll just take us a shear. And then from that point, we'll move forward into the rest of the story and the rest of the Sefer. So that's where we're at. Kind of just give us a frame of reference. Quick review of where we were at. We've been exploring Perek Chaf Hei from the vantage point of the conflict between David and Nabal. What's the underpinning of the conflict between David and Nabal? Why is Nabal being so obnoxious? And why does David respond and react in such a violent fashion? And then, of course, Abigail, who steps in to save the day, but we'll come to Abigail a little bit later. So we looked at various pieces of it. We looked at the yichus of Nabal and his connection to David going way back, way back, way back when. So possibly there's that issue. We looked at the issue of David as the kind of the leader or melech, de facto melech in this region. Shaul has kind of stepped away from that role and David has stepped into it. And so in Nabal's reaction, there's an element of insubordination or even treason if you look at David as a melech, and that is reflected in the Gemara Megillah that identifies the conversation between David and Abigail surrounding the question of David's status as melech. And then thirdly, which we looked at last week, I suggested that that the focal point of David's reaction lies in Nabal's statement. That it's not just the fact that he refused to offer David's shepherds and men payment for their service, but that in fact he insults them. And he insults them in a way that's more than just an insult, it really cuts to the core of what this history, what this period is all about, what David and his army are really all about. And so we're going to come back to that phrase now, which is in Pasuk Yud. Vayan Nabal et Avdei David. Nabal answered Avdei David, saying, Vayomer mi David umi ben Yishai, hayom rabu avadim hamitparzim ish mipnei Adonav. Who is David and who is ben Yishai? Today there are a lot of slaves who rebel against their masters. And what we looked at last week was a kind of a dichotomy of interpretation. Those who interpret this phrase to mean that David is a slave, in a sense, rebelling against his master, or a servant rebelling against his master, the servant being David, the master being Shaul, or being Nabal, depending on how you look at it, and that it's an insult to David, one possibility. And the other possibility that we raised, which I actually like personally, I like better, is that the insult isn't just to David, but to the group, to the men, to the army that David is engaged with. Right? That gdud, that army that David has been with since Perek Chaf Bet, plays a crucial role in this whole period of David's life. And he's always engaging with them. He's working with them. He's engaging with them. The case that we saw a couple of months ago, which was the story of David and Shaul in the cave. Right? It was with his men that he was arguing. We'll see that case again in the next parak. He's constantly engaged with debating with operating together with his men. They form a unit, and they're inseparable. The very end of Sefer Shmuel Bet has a list of all of the heroes, all of the giborim, in David's army at this period of time. David's life really is defined by his, quote-unquote, his family. And his family is no longer his biological family, because they were all killed by Melech Moab, but his family is his army. And so when Nabal insults them, and does so publicly, David is not prepared to let that insult go, and he takes up the sword together with his men, and he says, "We're not going to let this go. He can't get away with that kind of public insult, public disgrace." So that was more or less where we left off last week, and we focused on the reference to Rabu Avadim Hamitpartzim Ish Mipnei Adonav, who are the servants or slaves that are rebelling against their master. So we talked about So where do these men come from? What's driving their common plight that has brought them into David's group or leadership? And we went back to the phrase when we first met them of Kol Ish Matzok, Mar Nefesh, bitter people of distress, and then the phrase Kol Asher Yeshbo Noshe, right? People who had debts, creditors coming to collect their debts. And we spent last week exploring the significance of what it meant in the biblical era to have unpaid debts that you couldn't pay, and what that basically meant, which was the first step towards slavery and towards being sold as a slave. And essentially what Nabal's answer to them is that you're not an army, you're a bunch of renegade slaves, and rather than pay you, right, you don't pay a slave. By definition, a slave works for you because he is your property. You don't pay a slave. I'm not paying them, they're my slaves. And if they're not my slaves, then they're somebody else's slaves, so I'll be happy to hand them back to whoever they belong to. And, right, that's part of the issue. If they don't want to get... And they want to get paid as a chutzpah enough, but if they should be happy that I don't hand them back to Shaul or to whoever the creditors are to spend the rest of their life in the indentured servitude.
That's what the Dred Scott case was all about.
Right.
I used to think, oh, that made Missouri so great. Oh my God, we gave a poor guy back.
Right. Giving a slave. So we talked, we actually talked about that last week as well, because part of the issue in the Torah is that the Torah prohibits returning a runaway slave to his master.
Well,
it's a unique halacha in the Torah. Lo tazgir eved el adonav, a slave who runs away and takes refuge in your, right? Ashi natzel elecha mim adonav, who comes to you for refuge, you may not return him to his master. Lo tazgir eved el adonav. It's a issa d'oraisa. So, in the context, and that we spent a good deal of time last week talking about, in the context of the Torah's view or approach and attitude towards slavery as a whole, we looked at the various issues, and the convergence of the laws pertaining to loan collection and collateral and repayment as it intersects with the culture of the slave trade that existed at the time. And we spent some time looking at the psukim in the Torah that kind of looked at that piece of, on the one hand, the respect that one has to have for food.
Was that followed by a lot of Jews that they did not return? Was that a common...
So again, what was common and not common is less... we don't know. I mean, we know that the Nevi'im talked about slavery in the context of part of the moral issues or challenges of the book, but there's no question that the Torah's description of the laws pertaining to slavery are intersect with the Torah's laws pertaining to loan collection. Because in the ancient world, those two were inherently linked. Right? The fuel for the economy of the slave trade was debts. And so the Torah was out of its way to separate them, and this is one of those moments where you see the intersection. Kol asher noshebo, right, these people who had debts, were on the verge of being sold as slaves, comes along Nabal, or being pulled into that kind of world, comes along Nabal and he says, "You don't have an army, you have a bunch of renegade slaves." And that insult stings, but more than stings, it undermines the essence of who David is and what he's trying to do. And so he decides to respond. Right. No, he's wrong.
No, that David's taking them in and...
Who's right?
David.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure.
Protecting them and
for sure.
Part of
100%. The defense here is to David. The defense here is of David and David's behavior. I think Naval's behavior crosses the line. And combined with everything else we've said about David being a leader and insubordination and treason, etc., you understand a little bit more where David is coming from. That was sort of where we left off. I wanted to put that introduction and review back on the table, partially for the benefit of those who weren't here, and also because we needed as a segue to the last piece of this discussion. The last piece of this discussion has been mentioned briefly in various contexts, but I want to explore it today in more detail. So if you take a look at the source page, there's a series of midrashim all around the same. We are in Perikah Hey, but we're not going to spend much time in Perikah Hey. We are going to jump very quickly to Breishit. But there's a series of midrashim. You know, midrashim come in various forms and styles. We tend to look at Medrash as a kind of a monolithic picture. All midrashim we paint with the same brush, the Medrash says type of approach. That is unfair to Chazal, because Chazal were much more sophisticated than simple storytellers. Number one, and number two, Midrashim were written over the course of 1,000 years. So the styles change and the focus changes and the purpose of Midrashim change, right? Midrashim are not all made of the same character. So there's a certain genre within Midrashic literature that plays with names and letters of words, but does so not for the purpose of gematria game playing, but because hidden beneath the surface are some very sophisticated thoughts and ideas, and they pick up on a phenomenon that's actually in the Torah itself. There's a concept in the Torah, in the Mefarshim, called Lashon Nofel al Lashon. Anybody ever hear of it?
Yes, but I don't remember exactly, but I've heard of it.
So we showed him talk about this phrase a lot. It means literally language or phrase or sound upon sound. Lashon Lofel al Lashon. It's somewhat akin to alliteration.
Oh, they're going to say onomatopoeia.
Right. It's somewhat akin to alliteration or playing with sounds. There's a few examples. Shefech dam ha'adam, damo yishefech. There's a few powerful examples of this. The two that I like most are... V'noach matzachem b'nei Hashem. Why is that?
Yeah, why do you like that the most?
What's clever about this phrase?
Well, chen, if you reverse it, is Noach.
The notion that Noach matzachem is a classic example of lashon nefel al lashon, because you're playing with sounds, you're conveying sophisticated ideas, but you're also playing with letters and sounds, and it's not an accident. The Torah doesn't do that arbitrarily. The Torah does it intentionally. I'll give another example. Vayihi Ra b'nei Hashem.
Ra.
Okay. Son of Yehuda. Vayihi Ra b'nei Hashem. Who said the Torah didn't have a sense of humor? Right? It's classic example of Lashon Nofel al Lashon. Other examples relate to the use of the same word in different contexts, different meaning, but the same word. Ad Dor Rivi'i Yashuvu Hena Ki Lo Shilem Avon Emori Ad Hena.
Brit ben Abitarim. Covenant between the parties. Promised to Abraham that his children will go down to Egypt and be slaves there. Fourth generation, they will return here. Ad dor v'yishuv lehena. The fourth generation, they will return here. Because until then, the iniquity of the Amorites will not yet be complete. Ki lo shelem avon ha'amori adena. This phrase, hena, fascinating word, because it means two different things in the same pasuk. Hena here means here, right now, right, this place, and hena here means then. Because the avon ha'amori will not be filled until then. So it's a convergence of time and place. All playing with the same word. And there are other examples that puns, language, playing with words. So from that perspective, and because that's a phenomenon that we see in the Torah, Chazal pick up on it and apply it to various other places midrashically. And one of them is this: is the first two midrashim on your source page. Amar Rabbi Simon, Hu Naval, Hu Lavan. How did they get from Naval to Lavan?
Reverse the letter.
Right? Just reverse the letters. Just read Naval backwards. Hein, hein, ha'otiyot. Now it gets even better. Lavan is called. Right? Remember the famous phrase, like Lavan ha-arami. Okay, why is he called Lavan? Tzeil mad ma bikesh Lavan ha-arami. What does arami mean?
Aram my eye?
No, that's not what it means.
From Aram.
Aram. Lavan ha-arami, because he comes from?
Aram.
Aram. What did Chazal do with it? Classic. What did Chazal do with it? Lavan ha-aramai.
That's totally good.
The cheater, right? Because that's what he does. But look at the language, right? Arami to Ramai, and you have another example of Lashon Nafela Lashon. But this is not in the Torah, rather this is in the Midrashic approach to these things, and that's exactly what happens here. Malavanaya Ramai, Ramai because he is Arami. Af Naval Haya Ramai. Naval was also a cheater. Now, how Naval comes to being a cheater when he simply just didn't want to pay him? We'll come to it in a moment. Second midrash is based on the pasuk Lametzeach Almut Laben Mizmor LeDavid. The headings of Tehillim are complicated, subject unto itself. What is the Mizmor? What is Lametzeach? What is Almut? What is right? There are different phrases used in the opening of Tehillim. Amut Laben, says the Medrash, Davar Acher, Al Mut or Mot Lavan, the death of Lavan. Al Mitat Naval, but really it means not the death of Lavan, it means the death of Naval. Ki Otiot Lavan, Ken Otiot Naval. Vala Maktiv Laben or Lavan, Velo Naval. So why doesn't it say Naval if it means Naval? Shehu domeh b'masav l'Lavan. Is this similar? So I call Naval Lavan. You know, it's like mixing up Shaul and Shmuel. You ever hear anybody mixes up Shaul and Shmuel all the time?
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know.
Anybody, right? So imagine doing that with Naval and Naval, and with Naval and Lavan, and you're not too far afield. And the common message of both of these midrashim is that at the core of it, everything we've said about Naval has its roots in the story of Lavan. Now, in that suggestion, Chazal is doing two things. And this is a classic example of where a simple medrash sits at the top of an enormous wealth of information and insight that's kind of coded in this shorthand. Because this suggestion of Chazal to link the story of Naval and Lavan is a connection that works both ways. It gives us an insight into who Naval is, but more importantly, it takes us back into the story of Lavan and changes our whole understanding of the nature of
Yaakov's encounter with love. And so what I want to do in the discussion this morning, I want to come back to the story of Yaakov and love, story we're familiar with, story in Parshat Vayetze, kind of see where Chazal are driving the focus and how they're seeing, quote-unquote, Naval, of whom it says, ki Naval hu, Naval shmo, right, ki Nevelaimo, that this despicable, cheating, deceitful, lying, slave-trading character. And where did Chazal see all of that in Lavan? Lavan sometimes gets, you know, perception of getting a bad rap, because after all, what did he do? And come back to Lavan momentarily. On the face of it,
how many times does this happen? This Lashon al Lashon. I
mean, so in the context of names and reversal like this, it's not so common. But the notion of alliteration being used in the Torah is common throughout Tanakh.
And then you use the years 1,000 years. What happened pre 1,000 and after 1,000?
No, I'm just as the entire period of Chazal from the beginning of the Mishnah until the end of the Gemara was all of the history, a period of time when Midrashim, or the period of the history of that we call Chazal, is about 1,000 years, from the 3rd century before the Common Era to the 8th century of the Common Era, more or less, is the period of Chazal. Give or take. 7th century. All right, so let's jump back to Bereshit. And what I want to look at is pieces of the story of Yaakov and Lavan, bearing in mind that we are now working backwards. We are looking at the story of Lavan, comparing it to the story of Naval, rather than the other way around. So I'm going to jump back to Bereshit, Perek Lamed Aleph. And this also, we're going to work backwards. There are three parts to Yaakov's encounter with Lavan. They are
from the marriages,
the encounter with Lavan and the negotiation for his daughters, hand marriage. Right, the 6 years he works for him for the flock, and
the encounter on the mountain. You know, when
after he leaves, and Lavan comes running after him and challenges him, and Yaakov finally loses it and confronts him and gets angry with him, etc. So there are three parts of the story. We're going to look at two out of the three. I want to start with the last one: Yaakov and Lavan and their confrontation. Let's start with Pasuk Chaf Bet.
We're doing this so that we can understand why we're going to compare the two people. That's why we're going back to doing this.
So that everything we said about Naval, we're going to throw back into and give us a new insight into the story of Lavan, rather than the other way around. Pasuk Chaf Bet. The third day after Yaakov ran or escaped, ki barach Yaakov, veikach et achavimo v'yerdof acharav derech shivat yamim, Lavan took his brothers and he ran after Yaakov, caught up to him 7 days later. Keep in mind the time frame, we're going to come back to it a little bit later. But what's the time frame? How many days after Yaakov left did Lavan catch him? 10 days. Vayadbek oto b'hagilad. Vayavor lakim al Lavan ha'arami b'cholom alayla. Every time Lavan is mentioned, Lavan ha'arami. God came to Lavan ha'arami in the middle of the night in a dream. Yom alei shamalocha pen t'daberim Yaakov mitov v'yadra. Limits his ability to do anything to Yaakov. Rest of the story, he catches up to him and he says to him, "Vayomer Lavan li Yaakov, ma asita vategnovat levavi vateneged bnotai kishvuyot charev. What have you done? You stole in my heart. You ran away. You took my daughters like captives. Lama nachbeta livroach. Why did you hide? Vatignovoti, lied to me, vilegadatili, you didn't tell me, vashalechacha besimcha ubishirim uvtofa bechino, I would have sent you off with a royal send-off. Yeah, right. In chains. Vulonitashtani lenashekli vanai velivnotai? You didn't even give me a chance to kiss my sons and my daughters goodbye. I should really hurt you. I should really kill you. That would help his daughters. And Nebuchadnezzar, what can I do? Your God came to me and said, don't touch you. I get that you went because you miss your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? It's one of those moments. There's a couple of phrases like that in Tanakh, which I just, when you stop and take a step back and think about them, they're really extraordinary. Lama ganavta et Elohai? Why did you steal my gods? There's a phrase like that in Sefer Shoftim also. I think we talked about it by Pesel Micha. Et Elohai asher asiti lekachtem. Right, the gods that I made, you stole. That I made. Right, it's just an extraordinary phrase. Elohai asher asiti lekachtem. Kind of just to emphasize the absurdity of it. And here we come to Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayan Yaakov Yom Lelavan Ki Yareti Ki Yemaiti Penigzol Et Bnotecha Me'imi. What was I afraid of? What was I afraid of? That you would steal my daughters from me. Why would Lavan steal his daughters? His daughters are his, Yaakov's wives. He gave them his daughters as a wife, the mother of his grandchildren. Why would he steal their his daughters back? I leave that as an open question for a moment. And then, with regards to the Trafim, imashetim tzad alehecha lo yichya, so the rest of that piece of the story is about the search for the Trafim. I'm going to skip that for a moment. And then, jump down to Pasuk Lamed Vav. And here, the first time, Yaakov confronts Lavan.
Yes, ma'am.
Vayichar Yaakov vayarev b'Lavan. Vayan Yaakov vayomer l'Lavan. Ma pishi, ma chatati. What have I done? What's my sin? What's my iniquity? Ki dalakta charai, you ran after me. Ki meshashtat kol kelai, you went through all of my vessels, all of my tents, all of my belongings. What did you find? You find anything that belongs to you that shouldn't be here? I want to see it. Now, if they'd stopped there, okay, you came after me on false pretense, you went looking for your gods, you didn't find them, Shalom Yisrael, goodbye. But he doesn't stop there. Because what Yaakov owes Lavan is a patch and panim for everything that Lavan's done to him. And that's what he gives him now. And his reaction isn't about the trafim and what's going on now. His reaction is about the last 20 years. And so he lays it on the line. Now here, the next series of psukim, I want to listen carefully, because this is where the beginning of the story of Naval and the connection to Naval plays a role. Ze eslim shana anochi imach. I have been with you for 20 years. And during those 20 years, your goats and your rams and your sheep and your animals, not one of them fell to calamity. I didn't eat of any of your flock. If an animal was torn asunder in the field, if there was an animal that was killed by the, because that's what happens to animals sometimes in the fields, lo aveti alech, I didn't come to you with it. Anochi achatena, I took responsibility for it. Miyadit vakshena, I replaced it with my own. Gnuvti yom, gnuvti laila, I looked after the flock by day to make sure that nothing happened to them, and by night. Hayiti bayom achalani chorev, v'kerach balaila. Whether in the heat of the day or an ice chest at night, I took after it. I didn't sleep at night. to protect and to look after the flock, to make sure that not one went amiss. Ze li esnim shana bevetecha. For 20 years in your house, avadeticha, I served you. 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock, and 10 times you change the terms of our agreement. If it wasn't for God, my God, God of my forefathers, you would have sent me empty handed. You would have let me go empty handed. They come shilachtani, not with the royal entourage and music and tupim and mecholot. You would have sent me out like a pauper. Et onyivet yigia kapayir alokim bayochach amesh. God saw my poverty and my work and my effort and demonstrated here today. What Yaakov is alluding to is complex. I'm going to come to it in a second, but I want to go one more pasuk. Vayan Lavan Vayomer al Yaakov. Lavan's response to Yaakov is Habanot Bunatai Vabanim Banai Vatson Soni Vechol Asher Ata Ro'eh Lihu Livnotai Ma'asel El Hayom Livnehen Asher Yeladu Ata Lecha Nichnata Brit Ani Ve'ata. Daughters of mine, flock is mine, children are mine, everything's mine. They're not yours, Yaakov. But if you want, we can make a brit and we'll part in company and we'll part b'shalom. It's a fascinating conversation because they're talking about two different things. Lavan is talking about the daughters belonging to him, and Yaakov is talking about the terms of his employment. And you ever get this conversation, you ever get this point where you have two people having a conversation, it doesn't look like they're on the same, they're having the same conversation at all, right? So what's going on? So first of all, where in this little conversation, just in this little episode, where is the story of Naval?
It's the same story.
Because?
Because basically, from Naval and Lavan's point of view, he is basically saying, no matter what you did, since you were my servant, everything...
We'll come to the servant and slavery issue in a second. That's a separate interpretation. But just in terms of the pieces, the variables of the text itself, what similarities are we seeing in the story of Naval?
I mean, Naval thinks, you know, these people that were protecting his flocks that were... because of their stature,
Naval had a flock, and David's men protected them.
Right.
Correct. Then it came to payment, and what did Naval do?
He
said no. Now flip it around. What did Yaakov do?
They all belong to him.
Right. Yaakov
watched
whose flock? Levin's flock. Yaakov makes it very clear that he spent his years protecting Levin's flock. Like David's men protected Naval's flock. If you think Shaul and Shmuel is confusing, whoa, right? For 20 years, Yaakov protected Lavan's flock. And for 20 years, he made sure Yomam, Valila, day and night, nothing ever happened to them. And when it came time for payment, right, Naval said no. Lavan said...
these aren't yours.
Well, even before that, he kept reneging the terms of the agreement. Right. So there's this parallel just in the moment when Yaakov finally confronts Lavan. Suddenly there's a piece of the story which we don't see earlier in the parsha. We don't see this whole business about Yaakov protecting the flock and being there, and I was a ice chest at night and by day in this heat of the sun protecting your flock. In the story itself, we don't hear it. But in the after conversation right here, suddenly we see that this was a driving tension between Yaakov and Lavan for those, I don't know, about 20 years, but certainly the last six, but let's say for 20 years, driving tension. Yaakov's role, which was to protect the flock of Lavan. Again, Yaakov comes without money. comes without land, he comes without resources. So when you come without a flock and without money and without land, what do you do in the ancient world?
Okay.
You work for your strength. And your strength, Yaakov certainly demonstrated his strength at the beginning of the parasha with the rock. So Lavan puts him to work to guard his flock, to protect his flock. Much as David's men were put to the effort of protecting Naval's flock. And when it came time to payment, to pay them, the result was the same. There's also some interesting language parallels. And if you take a look at the source page, I kind of just charted out a few of them. Some of them are just technical. Lavan's story, Yaakov decides to leave. V'Lavan halach l'gzoz et tzono. At a moment when Lavan had gone to shear his flock, that's when Yaakov has the dream, the second dream that tells him that it's time to leave, similar to Naval, he b'gzoz et tzono b'kamel. All the years that I was with you, Zeesum Shana Anochi Imach, for 20 years I was with you and I protected you. Similar to Koyime Eyotamba Kamel, all the years, all the days that David says they were there in the Kamel. I protected the flock, Rechelecha Bizecha Lo Shikelu, Ve'eleit Sonacha Lo Achalti. The flock was protected, nothing ever went amiss. I didn't eat any of your flock, I didn't take any of your flock. This was all honest work that protected you and your integrity, similar to the Na'arim who say, V'lo echlamnu v'lo pakatnu ma'uma, nothing went amiss in all the years and all the days that David had protected his flock. The Yom and Laila reference, similar, right? Choma hayu aleinu gam Laila, gam yomam, kol yomei yotenu imam ro'im tzon, that we were a wall of protection to the flock day and night, as Yaakov says of the flock. You flip my terms of my agreement 10 times, v'tachlefet maskoti aseret manim, similarly to Naval's reference of Vayashav li'ra'at tachat tova, right? David said he repaid him evil instead of goodness. The one that I thought is most interesting, but it's very technical, but it's just kind of point of reference, is the reference to 10 days. After how many days did God smite Naval dead?
Must be 10
days. Right. And how many days after Yaakov left did Lavan catch up with him?
10 days.
10, right? 3 days until he was informed and 7 days to chase after him. So it's irrelevant information in the context of the story, but relevant only because it links two stories together. What's really going on, however, right, this is all, every time we have textual parallels like that, you know, there's really a much deeper connection that lies beneath the surface. What's really going on is in Pasuk Mem Gimel. And that's really the window. Right? And that I put into the chart, just beneath the chart on the page, in source 5. Vayan Lavan Vayomel Yaakov Habanot Benotai Vabanim banai, v'yatzon soni, v'chol asher ata ro'eh li hu. Daughters are mine, sons are mine, animals are mine, flock is mine, it's all mine.
Did they both believe Lavan and Naval that these are their slaves? I mean, that they're never going to release them?
Right. In Yaakov's case, it's clear that Lavan tries to render Yaakov is a slave, or to look at Yaakov as a slave. The issue of the attitude towards slavery is at the core of the story of Yaakov. And the clearest example is this declaration, which is off the charts if it's chutzpah, unless it's off the charts in chutzpah, unless you see it in the context of the ancient practices as well as the Torah laws pertaining to giving a slave somebody to marry. The rule was, and this is a biblical law as well, that if a person enters into the status of servitude or slavery unmarried, you may provide them a wife to be able to produce children. The wife and the children, however, remain the property, or forgive me, of the master.
That's terrible.
OK? Okay.
What about the fact that he's a nephew?
That's a practice. That's the standard practice.
He was already a nephew to begin with. Wasn't he a nephew?
Yes, but he was a nephew who ran away from Esav with nothing, and Lavan took him in. And if Lavan took him in, then what does that make Yaakov to Lavan?
A slave. But Yaakov was angry, though, when you read that. But Yechar Yaakov,
he was angry.
Standing up for himself.
Right. I'm going to come to that in a second. Right, we're going to reverse this in a second. But from Lavan's perspective, I begin to understand Lavan. From Lavan's perspective, I begin to understand Lavan. Take a look at source 6, which is the Psukim in Shmos Perek Chav Aleph. Ki tikne eved ivri. If you acquire an eved ivri, now an eved ivri, remember that in the biblical context of the laws of an eved ivri is not what we would typically identify as a slave, because it's an indentured servant, because there are certain rules of what you may or may not do, because it's limited by the Beit Din. Only the Beit Din can create an eved ivri. There's all kinds of laws pertaining to the limitation of it. But nonetheless, it exists in, as a phenomenon. 6 years he may work. At the 7th year, you must let him go. Can't have eved for more than 6 years. If he entered into your service married with children, then he leaves your service with his wife and children. You may not keep the family. Whereas, im Adonav yiten lo isha v'yalda lo vanim ovanot, if the master provides him with a wife and they have children, they stay with the context of the servitude. So when Lavan says to Yaakov, "Habanot b'notai v'abanim banai v'atzon soni," what is essentially he's saying is, "I gave you my daughters. I didn't give you wives. I gave you my daughters to produce more servants. You, Yaakov, you want to leave? Leave. But the family is mine."
But that means he treated his daughters as servants,
and he treated Yaakov as a slave.
But the children are slaves.
Surprised how Lavan treated his daughters. given the history of what he did with them, that doesn't surprise me at all. But the notion that Lavan's relationship with Yaakov was built around this intersection was Yaakov to be treated as a partner or as a slave? So the core of understanding Parshat Vayetze. Right. It's not an accident that Chazal in the Haggadah link Lavan to Paro. Remember the famous passage: "Tzei umad ma bikesh Lavan Arami, sheParo lo gazar el al azchamim v'Lavan bikesh v'Lavan bikesh laakor etakol." Right? Paro decreed only on the men. Yaakov, Lavan wanted to uproot Yaakov completely. Beyond the assertion that Lavan wanted to destroy Yaakov and therefore cut the Jewish people off before it started, the comparison between Lavan and Paro is a comparison between the moments in which Israel faced a moment in which the enemy tried to enslave them. And that was exactly the issue with Lavan. I'll give you another example.
From Lavan's perspective, he was just following the culture of the time once he assumed that Yaakov was his servant.
It's still evil.
I didn't say it.
100%. 100%. He is working off an assumption that he was going to enslave Yaakov. He's a renegade. He's a runaway. Be happy that I don't... Right, what's the Torah's law again with regards to renegade slaves?
Return them.
Right? You must... You mean the Torah's laws? You may not return
no,
them.
No, not mine.
Cultural law, culture at the time was.
Right,
so, Lavan, Yaakov is a runaway. Yaakov's a renegade. So Lavan says, "Listen, you want to be a renegade? It's fine. I'll be happy to take you in. But now you become my slave." And it's never articulated that way until you see it at the end, and suddenly the whole story takes on a different context. I'll give you another example of the focal point between Yaakov and Lavan's debate or different views. From Yaakov's perspective, he's working 6 years, 7 years for... It's another example. It's another interesting issue. Why are the multitudes of Yaakov's life always in sevens? Right, he works for 7 years for Rachel, and then 7 years for Leah, or vice versa. Right? And then 6 years for his own flock. We'll come back to the 6 years in a second, right? Here's the Torah's law. The Torah is saying 7 years and Evidivu goes free. Right? So there's these variables that appear later.
Well,
he's
not Jewish.
No, I understand that, but the variables are still relevant to an understanding of the story. It's not about the technicality. It's not about whether Halach existed in Sefer Bereishit. It's about the variables of the story that are variables we're familiar with in the context of the Torah. I'll give you another example. One of the great mysteries in Parsha Vayetze is Yaakov's quote-unquote behavior with the flock. Right? One of the great mysteries. What Yaakov and Lavan have this very strange conversation about the negotiated terms for Yaakov's employment, not for Rachel, not for Leah, but for his own flock. And he references it here when he says, "Vatachlefet maskorti yaseret manim." He kept changing the terms of our agreement. And in the end, Yaakov starts to play with sticks in the trough and whatever magic he thinks he's doing in order to be able to produce some sort of fight fire with fire and react to Lavan. It's that story that he references when he talks about Lavan cheating him and denying him his right, etc. The problem with that story is that it's extraordinarily confusing. I don't know if you ever went to Parsha Vayetze and try to figure out the spotted and the speckled and the striped and the white and the brown and the flock and the sheep and who's who and who's what. Right? It's extraordinarily confusing. So what I want to try to do is try to sort this out and to see where Lavan's duplicity and where his evil really emerges from that story. There's a tendency in contemporary scholarship to kind of defend the scoundrels of Sefer Bereishit, right? To defend Esav and to defend Yishmael and to defend Lavan and right? To be harsh and to kind of a little bit of revisionism in the context of Sefer Bereishit. So I want to look at this story in particular. So what I've done is I've taken that piece of the dialogue, which is in source 8. I put it on the page. You can look at it on the page, kind of a couple of highlights there that will help us, or you can follow it in a Chumash if you want the translation there, Bereishit Perek Lamed. So let's see what happens.
Is there anything wrong with following it here?
No. I just put it there. If you have a Tanakh with English and you want to follow the English, I'm telling you where it is. It's Bereishit Perek Lamed. You know what? The only thing we need to do is we need to start one pasuk earlier.
Page 33.
Yeah. We need to start one pasuk earlier, which is pasuk of Hey. Vayhi kasher yolda Rachel et Yosef, vayomer Yaakov el Lavan. After Rachel bore Yosef, then Yaakov turns to Lavan and says, Shalcheini ve'elchal mukomi le'artzi. Let me go. I want to return to my land and to my place. Tnat nashai vet yeladai. Give me my daughters, my wives, my children. Asher avadati otcha behen. I worked for you, for them. Ve'elecha. I will go. Ki ata yadatet avodati asher avadaticha. You know how loyal and good I was in my service to you. And from here, we'll pick up either on the page or in the text, whichever you wish. Vayomer elav Lavan. So Lavan responds and says, "Imna matzati chem b'enecha, nichashti vayivarachani Hashem biglalecha." He says, "I, through my divination, my nichashti, my nichush, God has blessed me." Vayomer, or vayomar. He says to him, "Who said to whom?" Who said to whom? Who's speaking?
Lavan
is still speaking. Sure. So one of the problems with this dialogue is that you would typically not say or interject a "he said" Bayomer if the same person is continuing to speak. Bayomer Lavan, Bayomer Yaakov, Bayomer Yavan, Bayomer Yaakov. But here it's Bayomer Elav Lavan, Pasuk of Zion, and Vayomar in Pasuk of Chet. So what happened in between Pasuk of Zion and Pasuk of Chet to interject a second reference of Vayomar? You understand the problem textually? Nakvas charcha alai v'etena. Tell me what you want as your schar, and I'll give it to you. I don't know. Yaakov asked to go home. I didn't hear him ask
for anything else.
For a schar. Vayomer elav, to which he said, who's saying now? Who's speaking now?
Yaakov.
Yadata atasher avadeticha v'atasher haya miknecha iti. You know, I worked for you. Your flock was with me. Kima'at asher haya lecha lefanai v'yifrotz larov. You had nothing. You had a very little flock. You had a very small flock. And yet, under my guidance, v'yifrotz larov, it became many. It grew. V'yivarecha shemotcha l'ragli. God blessed you because of me. Yata matai ese gam anochi leveti. So when am I going to build my own? I'm going to go home with my wives and daughters and my children. When am I going to go home? When am I going to build my own wealth? That's all Yaakov says. Vayomer, to which Lavan answers, ma eten lach. Okay, so what should I give you? Yaakov didn't ask for anything. There's pieces of this conversation that are jumbled. Vayomer Yaakov, lo titen li mauma. Don't give me anything. Okay? If we stop there, then
he says, don't give me anything.
That's it. No, I just want to go home.
That's it.
Lo titen li mauma. Im taseli adavar hazeh, ashuva et etzonecha eshmor. However, if you do this, I'll continue to watch your flock. I will go through your flock. Hasem isham kol se nakod v'taluv v'chose chum v'ksavim v'taluv v'nakod v'izim v'yaschari. I will remove all of the spotted and speckled and striped and brown and spotted and speckled, whatever these words mean in the different colors, etc., amongst the flock, and that will be my reward. And then you, God will be my witness. You can tell that if it's not one of these colors, nakod v'talu, and amongst the sheep, and chum and brown amongst the or goats and brown amongst the sheep, if it's not of these colors, then I've stolen it, guaranteed. So be it. I agree. So then he removed all of the akudim and tluim amongst the goats, and all of the flock, the nukudot and the tluim, and the ones that are white, and cholchum baksavim, v'yitem biyad banav, gave him to his son, v'yasen derech shloshit yamim b'no ben Yaakov, v'Yaakov ro'e et tzon lavan anot tarot. Yaakov continued to work for 6 years, and in those 6 years, Lavan changed the terms of their agreement 10 times, as we read earlier. So, one observation that I heard once that I think just makes a lot of sense to understand this dialogue. There's a lot of ayomers, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of pieces of this conversation that are chopped. And what it sounds like is this isn't one conversation.
It's many conversations.
Right. It sounds like it's a series of pieces of conversations that are taking place over time. And that we're getting snippets of it because the Torah is pulling relevant snippets of these conversations for what's important for us to understand. So,
but these conversations are very different from the page 35 and 36. This is a whole different kind of conversation because they're almost talking like, I'll take this, you take this. That isn't what he says 3 pages later.
Correct. So this is where they start the negotiation from, and that's where we ended. Right? And that's where we see the Lavan Ha'arami, right? The Ramai, the cheat. Now, the truth is the cheat's here too. So first of all, what happened? What was the terms of the agreement? just basic pshat here. One of the confusing parts of the story is that it's unclear who said what to whom and who wanted what. Right. So what are the basic terms of this agreement? What did Yaakov request?
He wanted to leave.
Then he says
he has to leave with some of what he.
Right? He can't leave empty-handed. So he says, okay, what can I give you? He says, oh, lo titenim umma. Don't give me anything except this. That's all I want. I don't want anything except for the spot on the spectrum, the striped and the squat. It's an odd phrase. Lo titenim umma except for nakod v'talu v'chum v'galvan v'talu. So what's going on?
He's probably picking out, like, you know, the...
He likes the colors he likes.
Is
like
it negotiations?
He's probably picking out the little ones that are different.
I'll show you the minority of the flock. I'll show you something fascinating. This I heard from Ramadan. Just wild. Only Ramadan could come up with such an extraordinary wild comment. How many different colors are there? Now, what the colors are... Not an issue. If you look at the translation, they'll translate each one of them differently. Spotted and speckled and striped and brown and white and you name it. In total, and there's one missing here, because there's one that's mentioned in the next parak when Yaakov has a dream. So we'll add that to our next. How many different colors are there in total? Let's list them. What do we have? Just give me the phraseology, whatever they are. No, don't worry about the English translation.
Nakod
and Nakudim.
Talu.
Chum.
Talu
and Nakod. Talu and Nakod, Nakudim. There's the same, one's plural, one's singular. Nakod and Talu, Chum and Talu and Nakod. Atyashim ha Akudim. Correct? Viatlim. ואת כל העזים הנקודות והתלועות. כל אשר לבן בו. לבן בו means it has some white in it. Right? It means it's colored but it has a little bit of white in it. And chum we did. There's one more that's mentioned in the next parak, and that's כל העתודים עולים על הצון, עקודים, נקודים וברודים. What is ורודים? Again, I'm less worried about what they are. Each one of them is a different color form of something. I'm fascinated by the fact that how many different colors are there?
Six.
How many years did Yaakov work for Laban?
Six.
Not unreasonable to assume that I have six different colors because every year Laban changed the terms of the agreement and every year was for a different color.
Wow.
Isn't that cute?
Right? But it's one conversation because the whole thing is put together, but it's not one conversation. It's 6 years of a conversation. Yaakov says, I just want one thing. Give me all the Nukudim. He says, okay. Comes along next year and he says, no, I didn't tell you I'll give you the Nukudim. I told you I'd give you the Tluim. Okay, give me the Tluim. No, I didn't tell you I'd give you the Tluim. I told you I'd give you the Chum. And every year they're switching terms. Hence, Vatachlefet Maskurti. Aseret monim, you change the terms of my agreement tenfold. Right, now it's six instead of ten, but round it up and you get to ten. Right, more or less. It's just an interesting thought. I don't necessarily know that it's pshat, but it is an interesting. It is an interesting pshat.
Maybe he raised those colors, those particular colors.
But what? The patterns and colors, right? They're not really colors. They're patterns. Right, they're all different kinds of patterns, right? Well, there aren't that many colors in sheep, okay? Yeah. But there are patterns. So what's the issue in the pattern? What's going on here? What did Yaakov request, and what did Laban answer? So I want to come back to this phrase, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Yeah. And this source 8, this Perek Lamed Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayomer ma eten lach. What do you want me to give you? Vayomer Yaakov, lo titen li me'uma. I don't want you to give me anything. And yet he makes a request, which is, kod im taseli adavar hazeh ashuva eretz uncha eshmor avor kol chod uncha yom asir mesham kol se nakod v'talo v'chosech chum b'ksavim v'talo v'nakod ba'izim v'yaschari. So he says, I don't want anything. And then he says, I want all of the striped and speckled and spotted and colored and brown and white. And I want that. And that'll be my schar.
Does he mean he's not really giving it to him? It's his. He's earned it. You know, like he's being generous.
Oh. So I think that's part of the story. Mm-hmm. Is that Yaakov, when he says, when Lavan says, ma'aten lach, what does Lavan mean? You worked for me for 6 years, 7 years, and I gave you Rachel. You worked for me for 7 years, I gave you Leah. You worked for me for another 7 years, and I will maybe give you some sheep and some flock, right? We'll compensate. And Yaakov says to him, interesting word, look at the word schar. Pasuk Chavchet, Yaakov, Lavan says, Vayomar, Nakvas chorcha alive etena. State your schar, meaning how much do you want to be
paid.
Now, if you're going to be paid, that means what's the relationship between Yaakov and Lavan?
Okay, he
worked for him. So who's the work? Who's the Eved and who's the Adon?
Yaakov's the Eved.
Yaakov's the Eved, and Lavan is the Adon. We call it a poel and we call it a worker and an employer. But we live in a world of employer and employee rights. Okay, in the world of Tanakh, if you become a poel, you become a skayom, you become somebody who you work for me, then I set the terms of those of that condition. So tell me how much do you want to be paid? To which Yaakov responds and says, "Lotitin li ma'uma." I don't want to be paid. I've worked for you for 14 years. I don't want to be paid as a worker, as a sakhir, as a poel. I'm not interested in being your watchman and your servant. What I want is a recognition of, and that's in Pasuk Lamed, Ki ma'at asher haya lecha lefanai v'yifotz l'ro v'yivarecha shemotcha l'ragli. I want a recognition that everything that you have is only as big and as significant and as successful as it is because of me. And therefore, says Yaakov in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, lo titen li ma'uma, as a schar, as a reward, as a payment, I don't want anything. But this is what I'm going to do. Ashuva eretzoncha eshmor, evor b'chol tzoncha, I'm going to go through your flock, and I'm going to take kol se nakod talu chum talu v'nakod v'ya schari. I'm going to take all of the animals that have any kind of pattern identifiable, and maybe every year it was a different pattern, right? So we said we're just getting all the conversations of 6 years rolled into one. But let's say, okay, I'll go through your flock and I'll take everything that's nakod. And the next year he says, I'll take everything that's talu. And mark my word, right? If I take all the nikudim, what does that mean? That's my schar. In other words, I'm not coming at this in the perspective of a partnership, of the perspective of a poel, of a worker. I'm coming at it from the perspective of a partnership. It's time that we looked each other as equals, and I worked as a partner with you. And if I'm a partner, this isn't your flock, it's
our
flock. And if it's our flock, here's how we're going to divide. I'm going to go through the flock, and I will take everything that's nakod. And then I'll go off aside with all of the nikudim. And anything that's not nakod, if it's found in my flock, then you'll know it doesn't belong to me. Because if I have a flock of all striped, or spotted, or speckled, or whatever you want to call it, if I have a flock of all striped sheep, then the offspring are all going to be striped. If I have a flock of all speckled, then the offspring are all going to be speckled. Like, that's the whole theory, is that I will take a certain scheme, color, pattern, whatever you want to call it, and I will separate them from the rest of the flock. That will be my schar. That will be my chelek. You follow? To which Yaakov Lavan says, "V'yom Lavan hen lu yekud berecha." That's fine. But now look what he does. Look at Pasuk Lamed Hey.
ויסר ביום ההוא את התיישים העקודים והתלויים ואת כל העזים הנקודים והתלועות, כל אשר לבן בו וכל חום בכסבים. Again, I'm assuming this is not one, this is an annual event. Every year a different color scheme. But in all cases, he went through the flock, took all of these patterns that Yaakov was negotiating over, and what did he do with them? Gave them to Lavan? He gave them to Yaakov? No. Vayiten biyad banav. He gave them to his son. Vayasem derech shloshit yamim b'nov en Yaakov. And he took, and the son took all of those striped and speckled and spotted and whatever have you off 3 days' journey. V'Yaakov ro'e etzon Lavan hanotarot. Yaakov is left with the, and here Tzon Lavan is a fascinating pun, because it's the Tzon of Lavan, but it's also
white.
The Tzon Lavan.
White.
Right. All that's left. And then, however, what were the terms? That the only flock that Yaakov had for himself was Lavan. The Nukudim, the Atudim, the Vudim, the Spek, right? So here's Yaakov left with a Tzon Lavan, because Lavan had taken all of those that Yaakov was supposed to have as his char, took them off the side, and said, okay, Yaakov, I agree, we signed a contract. You get the Nukudim. Right, here's your flock, now go produce Nukudim. Next year, okay, we'll sign. You get the Vudim. All right, well, we take all the Vudim, hand them over to Lavan's son. You get the son Lavan. Now go produce Vudim. And hence Yaakov is left with no recourse other than this whatever trick he does with the sticks in the trough, which how it works and whether it works is not our discussion right now. But it's a fascinating read, because suddenly the duplicity of Lavan emerges from the negotiation. And what's at stake here is Yaakov's status, because Lavan looks at Yaakov as a servant, as a slave, as a poel. I can do whatever I want to him. He should just be grateful that I don't send him packing back to Lavan, back to Esau. That's the issue.
But when he does confront him, he acts like they never had a conversation about him leaving, but obviously they did have a conversation.
6 years ago, he said he was going to leave.
Every year they renew it, because the guys...
Well, every year he knew that eventually, because Lavan says to him, you're not going anywhere, right? Because Lavan's whole message is, you're not going anywhere. We're going to keep changing the terms of the agreement, because I've got you here and I'm holding you and I'm not letting you go. And if you do want to go, you run away, you leave the flock and you leave the children and you leave the wives and you leave everything else, because you're my slave and they belong to me.
But how do we know that Yaakov started off as a partner? I mean, where does it come that we know that he came there the way Yaakov's explaining, I came as a partner? Where do we
come as a partner? Yaakov wanted to be, right? Yaakov enters into this agreement with the perspective of, I will be,
eventually,
right? I worked for you for 6 years, for 14 years.
Now
I want to, so I'm not your slave, I'm a free man. That's exactly the conversation. It's a question of whether he came to him as a partner. It's a question of how dare Lavan try to enslave him? Chutzpah's off the charts, right? You run away from Esav and you come to mine, and I give you and I give you hospitality in my home, and then I make you my slave. That's exactly what Lavan did.
Well, that is what he did.
That's exactly right.
Yaakov came
and Yaakov's coming with a business proposition. You went from a flock of 100 sheep to a flock of 10,000 sheep because I looked after your flock for 14 years. Okay, so I want a chelek. Lavan says, fine. I'll give you a chaylik. Right? This is what's going on. It's an extraordinary conversation.
But Lavan, from the beginning, Yaakov just wants to marry his daughter. All of a sudden, it gets to be all business transaction. Oh, you want to marry a daughter? Work for me 7 years.
It's not a business transaction. It's a slave transaction.
Just
where do you find the notion that if you want to marry my daughter, you work for me for 7 years? The only precedent for such a concept is in slavery.
And this he says to his nephew.
Right. It's the only context, it's the only precedent, it's the only context that makes sense in this regard, which is why at the end he says, Haba Notai. This is the story of Lavan. And that's the story of Naval.
That's exactly the same message that Naval was conveying to David and to David's men. You are a bunch of renegade slaves. Just be happy that I don't extradite you back to your masters or to Shaul the Melech. What do you mean, pay you? As Lavan says to Yaakov, what do you mean, pay you? The flock is mine. The daughters are mine. The people are mine. You're a slave. You want to go home, go home. But everything belongs to me. It's exactly what Naval says. You want to leave, leave, but you belong to me. And hence Chazal saw Naval and his duplicity and his evil on the same level as they saw the story of Lavan. It's an extraordinary medrash. And so I put at the end of this little source page a little cute little piece, right? Say umad ma bikesh naval arami sheparo lo gazar el al zcharim benaval bikesh lakor atakol. Right? The love and naval link is really an extraordinary piece. And that's all Chazal did was play with the letters. But in so doing, that's a window. It was a window into a whole level of insight and deeper understanding of Parshat Vayetze and the story of Lavan. All right, we are going to adjourn here. We will, Bezrat Hashem, pick up in 3 weeks. So the next 2 Mondays I'm out of town. So we will start January 7th. January 7th. Okay.